Welcome to a new episode of Straight to the Point. Today, I am really, really excited to bring on someone that I've got to know through a mastermind that I am a part of. We have a mutual mentor, I guess. I'm not going to give him a shout on this because he's coming on to this podcast at some point, so I'm sure we'll get to talk to him. But Johnny Bradley, welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast. Thank you for spending the time with us today, mate.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me. And yeah, thank you for all the listeners as well that will have the pleasure of listening to my general nonsense for the next few minutes.
Mate, it's good to have you on. Obviously, I've been watching your stuff quite closely, actually, over probably the last 3 to 4 months since I've been working with Ed. And you know what? Looking back over your journey, you've done some really, really cool things. And I obviously know what you do, but for the people at home that are listening, or commuting, driving, now the world's opening back up again. What is it that you do? Who are you? Where have you come from? And what do you specialise in?
Fantastic. So I guess ultimately, I'm an internet gremlin. So I sit on my computer all day. And that seems to be the majority of what most of us are doing. But no, in all seriousness, I run an e-commerce education company. And we focus on using Amazon as the platform to generate sales, to drive traffic, because, you know, a lot of, you know, you'll know, and for all business owners, at start, one of the hardest things to do is find customers, right? So we leverage that platform. But one of the big things we really focus on is brand building, right? And this is, you know, how we've kind of connected, because that's a passion of yours and it's a passion of mine as well. And I know that that's what really makes a difference. So we kind of couple brand building along with using existing e-commerce platforms to drive sales. And that's what I've been doing for the past few years. It wasn't always that way, unfortunately. You know, I used to have a 9-to-5 job. I used to be in recruitment. I worked for Apple for a long period of time. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that I learned a lot. I mean, the majority of what I teach and the majority of my ethos and the way that I operate, I learned from basically being indoctrinated in, through Apple, right? And, you know, I was a sales trainer, I was a technical trainer, I did all sorts of jobs there. And I just really got an understanding, a really thorough understanding of how they approach customer relationships and how they approach their branding and their products and everything they do, everything they do with their service. So I've just tried to take what I've learned from that, you know, huge company, you know, $1 trillion company. I'm not, are they still trillion? It doesn't matter, right? And try and translate it to the to companies that are just starting or they're growing, you know, small, medium-sized businesses. And that's worked really well. And that's, I guess, my unique selling point that I really focus on is do it right, but do it once, right? Focus on a small number of things, but just put huge focus into it, intentional focus, because people can tell. Yeah, so that's generally, you know, what I do. I've been doing this for, I guess, 3 or 4 years now. And yeah, I wouldn't look back. It's just an incredible journey.
That's awesome, man. I think actually the Apple stuff, I didn't know about that. And I mean, that's actually quite a cool thing, because you're right, actually. Like, one of the things that we talk about a lot, especially on the podcast, the previous episodes that we've done, is all around that customer retention. And in terms of like truly scaling business, which is what my big passion is, right? It's not just about the typical expert world, which we have seen like so much, right? It's about one person only. Actually, it's not. You've got a team, you've built a team in the background, and what you've been able to do is grow sustainably, right? It's a big thing that I'm talking about at the moment. And in terms of like your experience with Apple and the work that you did, like, what is it do you reckon that actually makes them different when it comes to that relationship element and what you've then taken away?
Great question. They care. That's it. They care. They don't know if I can swear, but I would if I could. But they give, you know. And I just got off just doing a few voice notes back and forth between one of my clients, right? They sell customized gaming controllers, and they're doing new packaging. They do a total, you know, rebrand. And we were talking about the packaging, about how to actually make it a really good unboxing experience. And I was saying, you need to think about every single thing from the customer's perspective, because it's very easy to have our business owner hat on and go, oh yeah, that looks good. That's going to play off well. You know, people are like that, that will like that when they open it. But really putting yourself into someone's shoes and being a customer makes a massive difference from trying to think what a customer would think, right? You have to be a customer. what's the difference between opening a box that way and opening a box that way? There is a difference in what you see, and there's a difference that in terms of what the customer will perceive about your product and your brand, depending on what you do with that unboxing experience. Now, that's extreme attention to detail, but the only reason you do that is because you care about the end result. You care about the customer having a good experience. And ultimately that means that they're going to promote your products to their friends and family. They're going to have dinner with their, you know, their family or their friends. And they go, oh, you never know what I just, you know, you never guess what I just bought today. You know, let me show you. It's a really cool brand. It's this, that, and the other. And that attention to detail and that care can be sensed. You know, Johnny Ive said that you can sense care and you can sense carelessness. You know, if you have a product or a service or a brand, it doesn't matter what it is, any business, you can tell if someone cares about you as a customer. You can equally care. You can equally tell if they don't really care, or they, you know, they've tried a bit, but they haven't really gone as far as they should have gone compared to someone else. And it's something that you don't pick up naturally. You're not thinking, oh yeah, this company really cares about me, but you can sense that attention to detail. So I think that's the real key, is actually caring about, you know, what you're putting out into the world, but equally caring about the customers, their perspective, their thoughts, their worries, their concerns, their needs, their wants, you know, what they're doing at the time when they're interacting with your service or product. All those things allow you to build a better product or better service for your customer. And ultimately, they're the people that make your business successful. They're the people that give you their money. You've got to be able to, you know, enrich their lives in some way.
Yeah, so important. That attention to detail piece is massive. That's not something that we've really thought about in too much, but subconsciously we do it a lot, right? We're always looking for ways to improve, ways to get better, not just as a business, but as an overall experience. And I think actually, like, thinking back to my business, right, as a service-based content agency, which is what we do, everything is about managing expectation for one, but also looking at that. People call it the wow experience, don't they, with how they deal with things. And for me, it's like, we can hone in on that attention to detail. What are the small things that, when added together, make one big thing? And we continuously have to build on that. So, so powerful. That's such a cool concept. I've not even thought, but that's really, really cool.
I was going to say that wow factor, just to touch on that, that is important. That's what makes the difference. I introduced something to the training business maybe a few months ago, and it was when people join, then we set them up in a Facebook group with me, the person that, you know, sold them the training, my personal assistant, and anyone else that is kind of relevant for their journey. Now, that it's not really used, right? But it's just an attention to detail and a wow moment where people go, I can directly reach out to you easily from Facebook without having to go through a whole, you know, no load of other steps. So I have that personal connection with, you know, the course creator. I have the personal connection with the person that, you know, sold me and enrolled me over the phone. I have a personal connection with Johnny's assistant so that I know that I can always get support. Now, realistically, does anyone ever use it? No, not really. They might ask a few questions in the first week, but it's not a big drain on resources, not a big drain on time. And it's very easy not to do that. But because we do that, our customers, from the moment that they get enrolled into our academy, they feel welcomed and they feel looked after. It's not about a physical feature, or, you know, they're not going to benefit from it, but they have a feeling of being taken care of. And that's something that I'm always striving for, is how do you make your customers feel a certain way? And often, you'll know this, a feeling is not something tangible. You can't say, well, here's a feature that's going to make you feel this way. It's about that human interaction and thinking about how someone's going to respond and react to what you're doing. It's very powerful.
Yeah, so powerful. And I think it actually comes back to, again, people think about this, I think, too late in business. So like, they get going, they sell their product and service, then they think about, how can I make the service better? Whilst actually, if you could look at this right from the beginning, from the outset, how much more of a powerful of a concept and product and service could you create if you just took those extra moments? I mean, how did you get started out of interest, right? Like, I mean, you've grown really, really quickly over the past 3 to 4 years, and you went from Apple and then you've moved into what you do now. I mean, how did you, one, find what it is that you do now? And then two, like, what were your first steps to getting going?
By accident, after a lot of thought. No, so I started this without the intention of doing it. Okay, so when I started, I was working a job. I mean, I hated it. I was definitely in desperation. You know, a lot of people start a business out of desperation, and others out of, you know, they want something in life, they want to add something, and that's fine. But I say most people do it out of desperation. I was in desperation. So I was trying to find anything to make money. I tried a whole bunch of different things. I tried getting social media marketing clients. I tried all sorts. But I eventually landed on selling on Amazon and creating a brand. And I documented this process. So when I started a YouTube channel, and the first video was me literally going, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to start doing it and see what happens and take people on, along the journey of me trying to, you know, become successful or, you know, successful, whatever. And over time, I realized that I identified a gap in the market where people needed help that they weren't getting serviced for. So I'm sure you've seen, you know, lots of people that do Amazon training, and they do it in the US, and there's loads of American people that do it. And, you know, for the most part, most of them are good. But if you're in the UK, you know, we have different rules, we have different VAT, we have different customs, you know, there's different things that we have to attend to. So I started documenting what I was doing in the UK, and people were like, I need this information. So I started, you know, getting this information out there with YouTube videos, creating eBooks, and it eventually led into a training program probably after, you know, a year or 18 months or so. So it kind of came out of demand because I was still working my job, people sending me messages. I'm like, hang on a minute, like there's an opportunity here. I didn't think that wasn't the end goal, but it turned out that that was what people wanted, right? By putting myself out there and trying to help people because I needed the help myself, I found that people wanted to come to me for support. So I just let, you know, I jumped in with both feet and I started to really go down that route. And, you know, the first training program I released wasn't great. It was better than what was out there at the moment, but compared to what it is now, I mean, it's terrible, right? Because you were saying a second ago about, you know, a lot of people rush the process and they should do these things at the start. But ultimately, I didn't know this stuff at the start. I knew what I thought good training was. You know, I was a training facilitator previously to doing this. So I understand, you know, how to construct training, how to, you know, do learning objectives and debrief cycles and all that kind of, you know, jargon. But I still needed to have the experience to be able to improve the systems, improve the services and make the results for my clients better. And that did take time. And it took me looking at what I was creating and going, how can I make this better? How can I innovate? How can I improve the results that people are getting, to the point now where, you know, I like to boast that we have some of the best results in this market. And it's not because we're the biggest, right? But it's because I honestly believe that we are the best. But that's because I've put blood, sweat and tears into making sure our content is good, but equally the support is incredible as well. Now, that's basically the process. It just came through, that's what people wanted. And then because I'm maybe a perfectionist, I don't really know, a lot of things slip by me, but I want to try and make things as good as possible. I feel a responsibility to, you know, my clients, and ultimately you'll know this from helping people. You have a commitment, you've made a commitment to them, and I feel that I'm obliged, and it's within my blood to continue to commit and continue to make things better. So all of this has just come out of necessity and me just trying to make things better than they were yesterday. You know, this is why it all comes back to Apple, man, because every day at Apple, I was focused on being the best version of myself. And mate, I was a fanboy. I was so like manipulated by everything that they do that I just thought this was the world. This is what everyone does. This is how everyone should be. And then coming out of that, I realized that that's not how most businesses work. But I had that ethos of, I want to be better. I want to, you know, create better experiences. I want to make my customers feel happy. I want to give them something. And that's what I try and teach my clients, right? Is to have that same appreciation for their customers. So yeah, it's been a wild ride. But I think the couple of things that really have cemented it is just looking for where the opportunity is for customers needing help and needing something in the market that they aren't, you know, they're not getting served currently. Creating that, but then not resting on your laurels and going, oh, I've done it now, let's leave it. Let's continue to find out and innovate how to make customers' lives better. And these lessons, they're not something I just put into my education company. They are general business lessons that you can put into any service or product, anything at all. You find the demand, you find the need where someone isn't being served or they're not being served as well as you think you could do it. You create that, you give it to them, and then you continue to make it as good as possible. That's all I really focus on now.
I love that. And I think I want to talk about the YouTube stuff and the way that you built your audience in a second. I think that's really, really cool. But you're triggering little things in my head, which I think, you know what, they're such small details, but actually even the way that you communicate, and I think especially in the training industry, like one of the things I've always put down like elements of my success to is the ability to explain complex things simply.
And I have a story about this.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear it actually, because to me, like I spent a lot of money training on this stuff, like learning the way to be able to speak properly, and also learning the way to understand complex ideas and break them down and make them simpler. You naturally do it. I can hear it in the way that you talk now. Like, it's weird to say, but you make sense when you speak, which actually is quite funny when there's so many people that don't. And I'd love to know, like, is this something that you've naturally had, or have you learned how to communicate in this way?
I have learned. Yeah, I wasn't naturally good at this. I've been teaching for the best part of 10 years. Now, I've taught guitar. That was my first kind of teaching thing. But it even stems back to before that, because when I was about 16, I left school, so after GCSEs, and I wanted to do music technology at sixth form. They didn't let me do it. So I went to a music school that was just playing guitar for about 8-9 hours a day. So I was like a guitarist, right? And one of the first thing they taught us was how to teach yourself. That has stuck with me this entire time. And I was 16, I'm 31 now. And the ability to teach yourself and understand how someone learns was the most important thing I've probably ever learned in my life, right? And when I teach people, and I learned a lot from Apple, and you know, they gave me facilitation training and stuff like that, but it's just trying to understand how to communicate something so that someone else will understand it. And that is hard, right? So my story is, and I won't name drop anyone, people might be able to figure out who it is, but I won't name drop. There's a very large someone in the consulting niche, right? And one of their lessons, I watched it, and it's about 1 hour, 2 hours long. First of all, way too long for any sort of training. It should be 5, 10, 15 minutes, no more than 20 minutes, right? It's too much information. Anyway, the whole thing was talking about one particular feature or one particular, I can't even remember what it was, but they used something very complex to explain something very simple. I think it was setting goals, right? So the importance of setting goals, that's what it was. They used quantum physics to explain how to set goals. Now, from my perspective, I was looking at this thinking, what on earth are you doing? This person's, they're making tens and tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and they're taking something extremely complex that almost no one understands. Even quantum physicists don't really understand what's going on. And then they try and relate it to something that's very simple, like goal setting. I was like, that's an example of poor training, where it's just confusing people, making you look like you're knowledgeable because you're talking about all these fancy words and fancy, you know, quantum physics stuff, when in actual fact, you could have saved that person 1 hour and 50 minutes. And so when I'm creating my training, I'm like, how can I be as efficient as possible so that everyone can understand it? Because it's hard, you know, if you're training over video, if you're doing a YouTube video, it's hard to be able to communicate to every single person. But it is possible if you just really think about how is someone going to receive this information. It's having that empathy for their perspective, because if you're creating training, you know what you're talking about because you're creating the training. But it's very hard to kind of erase your knowledge and look back at it from a clean slate. And I think that is a skill. Now that's something that you can develop over time, of just trying to have empathy for the other person. Everyone has empathy. Everyone can tap into that. But I think it takes a bit of intention to really sit down and go, okay, really don't think about what I already know. Try and have a complete clean slate. And it's hard, right? But it's worth it. It's worth doing it.
Yeah, so I think practice definitely comes in, right? And I think understanding like what it is that you're trying to say. Now, this is funny, right? Because I run a content agency. So I have conversations with customers all the time in terms of like what they should be saying online to stand out from a very, very noisy crowd right now. And it's amazing how so many people have messages that they want to put out to the world. Like they've got something to say, but actually just trying to find the right structure, right? The right way to say it and finding their voice is something that a lot of people, I would reckon a large proportion of this planet struggle with. And again, this is something that I learned through training. And I know, like I say, for you, I've been doing this for years now, right? So it's become almost natural in the way that we do things. It's subconscious, it's trained into our brains. Now, when you first started your YouTube channel, and I love this because everyone always says like the first YouTube video is terrible, it doesn't really work, and you've got to practice and you've got to get better and you get better. I haven't watched your first YouTube video. How did you get going with how did you get going?
Hey, is the
first 300 videos are terrible. They're probably the last video I made was probably awful as well. They're all terrible. No, I mean, I've wanted to do something on YouTube for ages and ages and ages, and I never had a reason. I didn't have anything going on. I tried, but nothing worked, right? And when I was, you know, thinking of starting a business, right, I just thought this is a perfect opportunity to create some content. I like creating content. Granted, there's some times where I really don't want to do it, but I do like it. Like this morning, I've been editing a trailer for a new series that I'm doing. I shouldn't be editing my own videos. I've got way more important things to do, but I still love doing it. I was on the phone to Ed this morning and he was like, "What are you doing? Like, this is not a good use of your time." And I was like, yeah. I know you've told me this before. Yeah. But I like doing it. I can't help it. I genuinely like doing it. And so that's why I started my channel. And the reason, and this is really topical for me at the moment, so this is a great topic for me to talk about, is the reason why my YouTube channel did well at the beginning, and I became kind of very well known for my industry in the UK. The reason I think that happened is because there was a narrative the whole entire time. The narrative of me, Johnny Bradley, trying to be successful, trying to, you know, make money, trying to, you know, launch stuff on Amazon, trying to do these things. There was always a narrative of, you know, I want to tune in for the next video. I want to see what's happening. You want to see me fail, right? Mostly. You want to see him mess up. So I think that's what happened. And there was a certain point where I lost the narrative in the channel and my growth started to slow. And looking back on it, it had to be that way. I had other priorities, because YouTube takes a huge amount of time, like just so much more time than any other content creation, I think. And I'm now getting back to that point where I've, you know, I spent 6 to 9 months redoing my academy last year. I mean, it was a lot of work. It was, you know, 155 tutorials, each one taking 4 or 5 hours at least to create. So, you know, this is, you know, literally hundreds, if not over 1,000 hours doing it. And I've had this realization now, I need to get back to the narrative. I need to create the content that people want to listen to and they want to follow along with, because it came kind of stagnant. I was doing tutorials, although very useful, and they'll rank on YouTube hopefully for years and years and years. It doesn't give people that reason to engage. So I knew that for a long time, but I didn't do it. And I'm now getting around to the point where I'm really focusing on narrative. I'm really focusing on stories, to the point where, you know, normally with my clients, I would interview them over Zoom. As much as possible, I'm trying to go to their house and try to actually see them, because there's more of a narrative there. There's something more to follow. There's more interesting. And again, it all comes back to empathy for my customer. My customer on YouTube is my viewer, and I want to be able to give them what they want, but also do it in a way that is authentic to me. I like doing that content, although it takes a lot of time. It's what people want, right? People want a narrative, they want a story, they want something to connect with, they want connection. So I mean, my advice for people, if they're starting out, although you can do the tutorials, although you can do, you know, there's so many videos you can make on YouTube, I would create a narrative, create a story, and allow people to follow your story. But you may not get, you know, hundreds of millions of views, but you'll get people that are really engaged with what you're doing. And if it's a business that you're starting, or you have a service, or you have something to sell, then they're going to be the most engaged people that you could ever find. because they know you, they know who you are, they know who your company is, and that will be a customer for life, right? As long as you keep serving them.
Exactly. I love that, mate. Like, obviously, storytelling is something that's really close to my heart and how I've been able to. And I look back, people that have listened to this podcast know my story, right? I was in property. I had an Airbnb and a service accommodation company. And I documented my journey on Instagram. I just chose Instagram rather than YouTube. And for me, like, that connection that I built made business so, I don't want to say easy, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like, it made it easy because opportunities were just coming to me, which would never come to anybody else because people felt like they knew me. They felt like they liked me, some of them anyway, most of them, the odd one or two. And they felt like they trusted me, so they wanted to transact. And when I was walking into like networking rooms, like, I was the shy, awkward kid that never used to really like speaking to people. But because people recognized me, they were approaching me going, hey, look, you're Chris Taylor. I've been watching your stuff. And it made it so much easier for me to have conversations with, which is why I'm like so big on encouraging people. Even if you feel awkward, even if you feel like it's not you, if you're looking to go into business, to do it. Because for me, like, I should never have belonged on camera, so to speak. I wasn't like everybody else on Instagram. But actually, because we were just telling the real story of what was going on, we found that narrative, like you said. Like, I never called business easy, but it made it easier than compared to anyone else that was on my
Hang
journey.
Hang on a minute.
I'm assuming.
Social media is not easy. I'm going to put that out there right now. Like, it makes that I reckon it makes that connection easier. And that, you know, if it's a sale, it makes it a lot easier because you don't have to build that trust. It's already built. But I mean, I find creating content extremely hard. You know, it's, and I'm sure you do as well. You know, you'll batch your content together. I don't do that, right? So I'm always constantly playing catch up. And so I find it's very hard, and a lot of the pushback that people might give, and I say to my clients, you know, connect with your customer, be the face of your brand. But a lot of people don't want to do that, and I think that's absolutely fine. But it doesn't mean you can't have a face of your brand. It doesn't mean you can't have a narrative, right? So one of my clients, he doesn't want to be the face of the brand, so he has a mascot, right? And the mascot is, it's like a, you know, not like a cartoon, but something like that, where that it's still a narrative, it's still a connection, because they don't want to be the face of it. Equally, you could hire people to be the face of your organization. If I mean, you don't have to be on Instagram or YouTube all the time, but you can still have people explaining content, explaining what you're doing. It depends on if that's possible, you know, financially wise to do that. But I think there's always a way to create that narrative and create that connection. I do a lot of work with, I'm kind of going on a tangent here, because I work with physical, you know, physical inventory brands mostly. And one of the big things is, how do you start a following from scratch when you don't really have any products? You might not even have a product yet. And it's all about creating that connection with potential customers or potential, you know, followers. And that's all about creating a narrative and creating interest. So I see on some people's pages, they have like horror stories, and people then like submit their horror stories for, I don't know, let's say it's a beauty product, like beauty product horror stories. And that's a narrative. You're creating, you're storytelling, you're taking other people's stories and then you're repurposing them. You're putting them out onto your story. You don't need to be the face of the organization, but you're still creating a narrative and you're still creating a reason for someone to pay attention. So I reckon the focus should always be on, you know, how do you get that engagement? And I don't see engagement as a like or anything like that. I see it as actual engagement. Is someone engaged in this? Are they interested in it? Is it interesting? Would I be interested? So when you're looking in, through your Instagram profile and you stop on a picture, why did you stop? If you engage and comment, always think, why have I done that? And I do this with Amazon images quite a lot. And, you know, the analogy I use is, I use Tinder as the analogy, right, everybody? So if you've ever seen anyone use Tinder, okay, I think everyone knows how it works. If you've actually watched someone do it, they're like this. They're swiping, like, swipe, 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 swipe. Your brain is making a decision if you like someone, if you don't like, you know, the look of them, basically, in a split second, in microseconds. You could probably do 3 or 4 per second. Our brain is doing that on Instagram. Our brain is doing that on YouTube, on Amazon, on eBay, on any sales platform, on Google, when you see an ad, your brain is always going, yep, I like it, no, I don't. Very, very, very quickly. So you have to be able to communicate and get someone's attention within a split second. And if you can do that, and you can do that through your socials, you can do it through wherever way you're trying to market, you're more likely to get a customer. And then once you get them in the door, you hook them in, then you can build that rapport, you can build that narrative. But you may have a fantastic narrative, but if you can't get someone's attention, they're never going to know who you are, right?
I love it. Yeah. And again, that hook, that headline, like I say, you're so right. Like, we're making subconscious decisions like instantly on these platforms. As you said, like a click of a finger, a snap, and you've made your decision as to whether you're going to engage and watch and digest or read or listen, however it is that's going to go on. So with these podcasts, right? If I don't get the title right, very similar to YouTube, I'm assuming, if I don't get the title right, and I don't get the interest, no one's going to click on it. Mm. So you've got two ways of podcast typing. You've got the guest or you've got the topic that you're talking about. And the best
get some clickbait in there, Chris.
Yeah, you've
got
to
get some clickbait. Get some clickbait.
We need, and, do you know what? I hammer this home, actually. And it's, we talk about clickbait and stuff, but actually, if you look at, I look at YouTube creators and I look at their top performing, it's not quite clickbait in terms of the real negative that you go into and you attach to it. There's real, they are talking about these things, but it's the headline, it's the hook, it's the thumbnail, it's the way that you get that attention and hold the watch time, right? And or hold the listen time on podcasts. And no matter, I guess for me, whoever is listening to this, the people that are spending the time listening to us rant on about these subjects today, right? For me, if you can get clarity on your message and work out what it is that your audience want to hear, the actual platform that you choose, for me, like again, depending on what it is that you're doing, it's kind of irrelevant. However, if I was going to give advice right now, like topically to anybody, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Johnny, as well. Like for me, I'm putting a lot of time into YouTube. That's one thing I am doing because of the leveraged ability to be able to have continued watch time via the search stuff. But we've got more episodes coming on, coming up on. But I'm also moving into the podcasting arena a lot, right? Purely for community building. So for me, like, it's not just bringing on people like you, Johnny, who have obviously gone out there and done amazing things. It's about bringing on community members and having some cool chats with them as well. So it's like a real big mix. And yeah, for me, like the platforms like Facebook, like Instagram, LinkedIn's actually still got some good organic traction. TikTok's got some organic traction. It's just, I've just struggled with creating content there myself. But in terms of like where my time is spent, it's going a lot onto community type content. So longer form, going into really giving that sort of beta. I mean, where is your time currently with content creation? Because I know you said you had some other priorities going on. I know you're back into the YouTube stuff. Where are you focusing?
Mostly panicking. That's where mostly panicking about what to make, recording content. Like, okay, so the way I think about this, and this is, I can't remember where I got this from, but it was a long time ago. It's when I first started. Someone said to me that each social media platform has a best use case for your customers. So for me, YouTube was the best place to be searchable because it's a searchable platform. Whereas Facebook is the best platform for community. Instagram is a really good platform for connection. So all I did was I constructed my offer, right? My brand essentially, or my customer relations using the services that are going to be best for what I want, right? So I want to be able to gain traction and gain exposure from YouTube, from something that's searchable. I want to then bring those people over to a community where we can nurture them and continue to teach them more and help them more. So that might be a free Facebook group or a paid Facebook group. And equally on Instagram, that's about that personal day-to-day. Let's build a rapport with you every single day. Let's have that personal connection. Send me a direct message, you know, speak to me, do a voice note. And those combined, I think that's what really builds that rapport. If someone said to me, you know, TikTok's going to be the best place to find and get exposure, cool, go to TikTok. And like even now I'm doing a new TikTok for a new brand and I'm really just testing out what content works, you know, doing 30 days of content, 3 posts a day and really figuring out what content lands with the type of person, the type of customer that I want to eventually find. If it turns out that that's not the best platform, I'll just ditch it. I'll just use another platform. you know, and get people over to where you can actually serve them better. So I would say, don't be forced to do a platform just because it's busy, right? Just because it's the in thing. Do it because there's a reason to do it, because that's where your people are, right? Everyone hangs around on the internet in some place. If everyone's on forums, then I'm gonna put all your effort into forums. If all your effort is on LinkedIn, all your customers are there, go to LinkedIn and spend your majority of your time there and use the other platforms to kind of help your overall ecosystem, right? You know, YouTube doesn't have to be the main thing. YouTube is probably the most time consuming out of everything is YouTube. So don't do it unless there's going to be, you know, a payoff in the end. And it might be a year, 2 years in the future, because that's the way it can work sometimes. So yeah, just I think about where your customers hang out and then create content where they hang out.
Makes total sense, isn't it? I think, again, for me, what I think I know a lot of people struggle with is obviously finding where their customers are, right? And one of the things I've been trying to make really clear for people is how they can go around finding them. Because there's one thing, I guess, saying create content for where your customers hang out. And I've said it a lot. But thinking about it, and again, I've got my thoughts. I mean, how did you find out where your customers were hanging out?
I was a customer. I was like, how do I find out this information? I was typing on YouTube, like, how to do this stuff in the UK. There wasn't any answers. I was like frustrated. I was going online into forums, no answers. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna create the answer. So that's where it came from. And then it's just through people coming through and going, oh, I'm so glad you made this video. I'm so glad you did this. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do more of that. I probably could have not done it on YouTube, but the reason YouTube, Google are so great is they are searchable and they're indexed, so that you can be there forever and you can rank for videos for a long, long time. Like I made a video about an American Express card, right? I got tons and tons of referral points from it, and it was probably the worst video I've ever made. I'm sitting there, I'm reading off the website saying, well, you get this and you get this benefit and this benefit, and I like it because it's gold. I mean, I literally said I like it because it's gold. It make me feel like a baller. And I got loads of referral points from that. It's because people were searching for, you know, what they think about a golden American Express card. I gave them some anecdotal video, which is a bit rubbish. And, you know, I benefited off the back of that. And I think that's crazy. I think that's absolutely absurd that I was able to do that video 2-3 years ago and be able to actually pay for flights somewhere because of that. Like, that's mad. That's just absolutely madness. So that's why I think YouTube's a good platform. So if you want to have that longevity and you want to be able to actually create something for a long term, I think YouTube's a very good place to do that. Will it be around forever? I mean, who knows? But I think if you want to be able to get quick wins, then use the platforms that do have that organic reach, you know, like your TikToks and things like that. You know, really take advantage of those, because you can grow incredibly quickly. You know, like Clubhouse, when people were on that from the beginning, I gave it a little bit of time, but then I was like, this is too time consuming for me. But a few people that continue to do it, I mean, they're dominating on it because they've just put the time in while they have that organic growth, and they've been able to take those people from Clubhouse and they've been able to put them onto Facebook, they've put Instagram, onto YouTube, onto their email list, because all you're doing is you're making sure that you can get that, I mean, that asset, essentially an email address is an asset, and keep it safe, keep it secret for a later day. It's all about just collecting as much as you can. But ultimately, that's the way it works. That's business. That's the way it works. You can't kind of beat around the bush here. So yeah, go. I think it depends what you want. If I was to start again, would I do the same thing? I don't know. You know, it's a different ecosystem right now. It's a different landscape. There's more content where there was none before for me in my niche. So maybe I would focus on TikTok, or maybe I would focus on Clubhouse or LinkedIn. But I think the only way to really see if that's right is by doing it and testing it, because I don't think you should have a particular relationship with one network unless it's provided you with a reason to put more time into that relationship.
Yeah, totally. I think it comes back down to that original point that we spoke about, right? Is as long as you can find your narrative, test it on different platforms and see where you start to connect the best. Just spend your time and give it some effort. Like, people just expect results, right? They see everybody else doing amazing things and they put a post out and nobody then reacts to it whatsoever. And the thing for me is that... Yeah, exactly. Like, people are always watching, whether they like it, comment on it, save it, share it, whatever. They're always watching. And the more that you can show up with the right narrative, with the right message, and again, the right narrative, the right message is whatever it is that you're doing, just showcase it. Social proof is how we make decisions, right? We don't buy anything now without going onto Google and looking for a review on something. We'll always find that one negative review as to why we won't do something. And for me, it's just about making sure that you've got the right combination of interruption marketing and search marketing. Something that we'll deep dive into in future episodes. But you know what? We'll probably do another episode on it because I think it'll be really, really cool to talk about. But I mean, you've obviously achieved a lot. Looking back at your journey, you've created shed loads of content. Your business is flying. I mean, motivation is something. It's a random thing to finish on, but it's something that I've wanted to talk about, especially with somebody that's done what you have. Like, motivation is a word that's thrown around, and for me, like, if you're not motivated to grow your own business, then for me, you shouldn't be in business in the first place. But when you've reached that level of, I guess, any form of success that we see, what is it that continuously drives you to keep going now? Like, what is it that motivates you?
Bills to pay, Chris. We've got bills to pay. I mean, there's always going to be, was it Maslow's... there's always going to be those things, and you know, once you get that security, you're going to go up to that, you know, that next level. So I mean, there's always going to be a motivation going up that towards the top of that pyramid. You know, I'm not at the top of that pyramid where I have, you know, complete omnipresence of Zen and I'm happy with everything. For me personally, it's all about progress, right? And I think this is kind of a trap as well, and it's a trap that I fall into of, you know, not thinking something's good enough, right? So you do something, and at the time you're like, that's great, I really like that, it's really good. And then you look back and you're like, that's not good enough, I could do better, because you've developed and you've learned and you've evolved since that point. And I look back at things and I think, oh, I don't like that, right? If I look back at some of those first videos, I'm like, I don't like... it makes me uncomfortable. So my motivation is, you know, always to try and be better. But ultimately, you know, the real motivation in the moment is, you know, when I have a client that has a story. I had one of my clients over a couple of weeks ago to do like a podcast talking about mental health and you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. And you know, he was able to create a you know, substantial business within 2 years that's then affected his family and his business partner and their family. And that, you know, I don't get to hear a lot of those experiences all the time, every single day. But when you do, or when I do, that brings me gratification, right? That makes me feel like, oh, I feel good. I feel motivated to like do more of this. I mean, it sounds cheesy, and I know loads of people say, oh, I want to change people's lives, right? I want to help people. It feels great. It feels good, right? It feels incredible. And I will take this back to when I was teaching guitar. And this is when I first kind of understood this feeling of helping someone or getting a gratification through someone else's experiences. And it was, she was probably about 12 I was teaching. So from a completely beginner, never played guitar before. And I taught her how to teach herself, right? Because I knew that was important to my journey. So I was like, I'm going to teach you how to teach yourself so you don't need me anymore. And I did that. And one time she came to a lesson and she was really happy. And she told me why she was happy. It was because she heard a song, you know, there's a hit song in the charts. I don't remember what it was. And she learned how to play it, found the chords online, learned how to play it, showed her friends, and they thought she was really cool and, you know, that she could just learn a guitar song and like learn to play a song. And she was like lit up and she was really happy with it. And I was like, I get it. All the work that I've been doing, although I was getting paid for it, I now see the experience that's made and the impact that's made on someone else's life. That makes a profound impact on your life. And this was a long time ago now. I don't mean how years ago it was, but it was, you know, it was over over 10 years ago, and I still remember that feeling. And I had that feeling just the other day. I interviewed one of my clients and they were talking to me about how Amazon FBA literally changed the way that their health, they were like, they got hospitalized through stress and anxiety throughout, you know, last year because of, he got made redundant and, you know, had a kid and all these, I mean, it was a horror story, but then he focused on creating a brand and creating a business and focused on, you know, his health and things like that. And it turned his life around, being able to actually dedicate himself to something, to be able to give himself something to work towards and something to do after such a terrible year. And he was like, that's changed my life. So it's those experiences that really drive me, right? On the very, very kind of core level of what's my why, right? Why am I doing this? That's actually why I'm doing this, because I know that with what I do, and this is the same for what you'll do, because you're helping companies, right? And they have customers, and ultimately the companies that you work with, they're providing a service or a product to someone else that's hopefully going to help them enrich their lives in some way. That may affect their families. It may affect their family, like their friends. There's so many people you can impact through the decisions that you make. I think that's very profound. I think that's really important to try and center to when you're feeling a bit down and a bit unmotivated. Of course, I get unmotivated all the time. No one wants to get up in the morning, right? I don't want to go work out. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get up and walk the dog at 6 a.m. No one wants to do that, really. I mean, I don't, at least. But there's things that you have to do, and you have to find that motivation and find that why, that reason why. And I think everyone's is always going to be different. If you can understand your why, then I think that's going to give that fire underneath you to put in the time, because ultimately having a business, running a business, and the stresses that come with it, you know, you need to have a significant reason why you're doing it, or a passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. I mean, what a way to finish. I feel like actually we could probably do another flipping whole hour and a half talking about this sort of stuff, because we'll have to do another one, mate. We'll have to do another one. For me, mate, where can people find you? Where's the best place to connect with you if they want to find out a bit more about what you do and who you are?
I mean, wherever they want to connect with me, it's up to them. So, hey, look, send me a direct message on Instagram. I'd love to know who's watched this and what you thought about it. So my Instagram handle is @JohnnyBradleyUK, United Kingdom. You'll be able to find me pretty easily. Send me a direct message. Tell me what you thought about this. On there, you've got all the links to my YouTube channel. You know, everything's on there. So I think that's the best place to go.
Awesome stuff. I'll link everything in the show notes for everyone to be able to find you as well. As always, if you aren't subscribed to the podcast or to the YouTube channel, please hit that subscribe button. Let me know in the comments exactly what you think, any feedback, any questions that you have. Like I said, we're definitely going to do another one of these. With the pandemics disappearing now, touch wood, keeps disappearing. We'll most likely do it in person as well, which would be epic. Johnny, really, really appreciate your time. Thank you very much, mate. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you, mate. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope it's been brought value to your listeners.
Legend. Cheers, buddy.
Take care.